we're done. C implies A. Okay, so now we want to show that if every ideal is finitely generated, then the ring is material. Okay, and here again, we can glean a little clue here. If every ideal is finitely generated, so the idea here is that you have a chain of ideals. I'll write this in a second. You don't have to write this at the moment. You have an ascending chain of ideals. I want to show that it eventually becomes constant. Mm-hmm. So what I do is look at this chain, and as we discussed, take the union of that ascending chain. Because they are, because it's a chain, I mean, if you take the union of ideals, is generally not an ideal. I mean, if you take the multiples of two union the multiples of three, that's not an ideal. Even numbers and multiples of three, it's not even close. 3 plus 2 is 5. It's not close. So, I mean, 5's not in there. So, I mean, this is not an ideal because this is multiples of two and multiples of three. So, for example, why is that not an ideal? Because it's not closed, because 5 is not in there. Okay. 2 is in here, 3 is in here, and yet the sum is not in the union. 5 is not a multiple of 2, or it's union, it's not plus. Okay, so, but if you have a chain, meaning a nested sequence of ideal, one contained in the next. Its union is an ideal, easy to see. And I want to show that it's finitely generated. I want to assume that if it's finitely generated, so I take the union of these ideals, okay, let J be the union, and then under the assumption of C, it's finitely generated. Okay? Well, those finitely many elements that generate this union. So again, I'll write this all out officially in a second. So let J be the union from I equals 1 to infinity of J sub I. Okay, this is an ideal. It's finitely generated. So take the finite number of generators. Each of those finitely number generators being in the union has to be in one of these guys. Maybe the first generator is in the third of these. The second is in the seventh. And then you take all these finitely many generators, place them in the J's they're in, and then that can only generate the highest index that you use. Right? So let's write that up. So C implies A. Okay, so let's J1 be contained in J2 be contained in J3 be an ascending chain of ideals. We see that J, the capital J, is the union from I equals 1 to infinity of Ji is an ideal. That just takes a real quick verification. Is an ideal that by C is finitely generated. Say by A1, A2, up to AN. Okay? Finite number of generators. Maybe 1, maybe 50, maybe 10 gazillion, but finite. Okay? So, we know, because each of these A's here is in the union, that each of the A's must be in. We know that A sub I is in J, right? Each of these A's has to be in some J, agreed? It's in the union, it has to be somewhere up the chain. Okay, so we know that A sub I is in J. I have to be a little careful how I index it here. I can't call it I. A4 may not be in J4. But let's call it K sub I. Some index, right? everybody with me? So each of these A's that constitute the generators of the union is in some one of these. Maybe one of them is in the third, one of them is in the eighth, one of them is in the fifth, one of them is in the 12th. Okay, but there's finitely many. So what do? I just take the maximum. Okay, then we see that all AI are in K sub maximum of K1, K2, K. Right? If I take the maximum index, I mean, let's take a simple example. I have two generators, A1 and A2. A1 is in J5, A2 is in J37. Well, then they're both, because of the containment, in J37. Okay, see that all AI are in the as is, therefore. What? Well, if all the generators are in a certain ideal, so therefore is the whole ring they generate. So as is, therefore, J itself. Okay? So what does it tell me if you have an ascending chain whose union is a subset of J27? If the whole thing is in J27, what does that say about J28? It's the same as 27 and 29 and stuff. Okay, this says that J sub J sub R equals J sub R plus 1 equals J sub R plus 2 dot dot dot, where R is equal to this mass. So that's how that works. I mean, they're all sort of nice, succinct arguments, but it took a little bit of going up. Everybody get that? Okay. So that proves that these three conditions are equivalent. So this is a good thing to keep in mind, because all three of these at times come up. But the most important one that we'll be employing is the fact that a ring is Noetherian means that every ideal is finitely generated. Because, and I'll give you a heads up, here's the big payoff. Because say I give you an infinite number of polynomial equations. Okay, I mean that's why, that's whatever, that's you. F1 of X1, X2 equals 0. F2 of X1, X2 equals 0. F3, and dot, dot, dot. Infinite number. And I say, find me the geometric set of points that satisfy all of these. What points in the X1, X2 plane satisfy all of these equations? Well, we'll see very readily is that the point that satisfy all of a set of polynomials is exactly the same as the set of points that satisfy the ideal that those polynomials generate. Easy to see. That's what we'll do. We'll get to the next topic after two more things. Hilbert basis theorem. Okay, so what does this tell us ultimately, because of the Hilbert basis theorem, which is going to say that this polynomial ring is Noetherian, what that tells me is that, as we just proved, every ideal is finitely generated. So the ideal generated by infinitely many polynomials is generated by finitely many polynomials. Therefore, I never have to worry about considering a list of polynomials that's anything but finite, which is great news. I have to worry about infinite list of polynomials. So I can always rely just on a finite set of polynomials. Okay, now, so we are leading up here to the Hilbert basis theorem.
Wait, Mike, can you say that thing again? Points that satisfy all polynomials are the same as the ideal that generates those? Points that satisfy all polynomials.
The points that satisfy all of a collection of polynomials is the same as the points that satisfy the ideal that they generate. Because, I mean, think about it. If the ideal that a bunch of... Okay, here you see before you a bunch of polynomials. I mean, we'll make that official in a little while anyway. The points that satisfy... If a point satisfies all of these, the ideal generated by these are basically linear combinations of these elements with coefficients chosen from the arbitrary polynomial. So if a point plugs in to give me zero in all of these, it's going to plug in to give me zero if I put a g here and add to it an h, g of f. Well, if it satisfies this and this, you plug it into this, it's going to satisfy. If it satisfies everything in the ideal, it's certainly going to satisfy the particular thing, any couple particular things that are in the ideal. So that's how that proof goes. It's an absolute triviality, don't forget it. Okay, so a set of the point satisfying all of a set of polynomials is the same as a point satisfying the ideal of the general, which is another bit of good news.
Or put that on a t-shirt, it's short enough.
Okay, now we want to get to this Hilbert basis theorem, which, remember, says that if a ring R is Noetherian, then so is the polynomial ring R bracket X, the polynomial with coefficients in that field. We need one more concept, and then this really slick proof, as you'll see, of the Hilbert basis theorem, among the many proofs that are out there. How many of us does the book do the Hilbert basis theorem? I'm not sure. Did he prove it? Anyway. Okay, so now, here's what we want to do. Let A be an ideal in R. Ideal in the four ring R. Okay? Let A be an ideal in R bracket X. So this is, remember, the ring of polynomials in the variable X with coefficients in the ring R. Okay. Now, we're going to define... Okay, so think... Just sort of picture in your mind this ideal. It consists of a bunch of polynomials, typically. They have different degrees, right? And different terms in there. I mean, I think maybe we've heard this term of leading coefficients. The leading coefficient of a polynomial is the coefficient of the highest power term that appears. Okay? So 3x cubed plus 85x, the leading coefficient is 3. Okay, so what we're going to do here is to let A sub n be the set of leading coefficients of polynomials in A of degree less than or equal to n. Okay, very straightforward. You have an ideal consisting of a bunch of polynomials. Now, keep in mind, of course, that an ideal could just be the zero element. But if it's not just the zero element, is it clear that an ideal, if it's not just zero, must have polynomials of arbitrarily high degree? Yes, why is that clear? Why, if you have an ideal of polynomials, must it contain polynomials of degree a million, a zillion?
You can just keep taking powers of it.
You can just keep taking powers of it. Or just keep multiplying it by... Remember, an ideal is closed under multiplication by anything in the ring. So anything includes x. So take a polynomial, multiply it by x, you just raise the degree by one. So, I mean, the point is that these leading coefficients are popping up on terms of higher and higher degrees. Okay, everyone get the idea here. Take an ideal A and let A sub n be the set of leading coefficients. Now, it's clear that we claim here two things. A is that A sub n is an ideal of R. Now remember, A sub n is the set of leading coefficients, which are just coefficients. They're chosen from the ring R. So these are not polynomials. These are just numbers. Okay? So for example, let's take an example. Say I take the ideal X in the real numbers bracket, the fancy R is real numbers. Okay? This consists of what? We agreed is all polynomials with zero constant term. So this is what we call A. A equals. So what is A1 equal? This is the set of all leading coefficients of polynomials of degree one or less. In this case, it's not too interesting because X has one as a coefficient. But what if I took something like let's not make it so obvious. Let's say in R bracket F, real number, polynomials with let's let A be the ideal generated by 3x cubed minus 1. Okay? All multiples of 3x cubed minus 1. But just take 3x cubed minus 1, multiply it by every polynomial. That's what the ideal generates is. Okay? Now, what will A sub 0 be here? Let's look at the field for this a little bit. A sub 0 is what? Well, read the definition. A sub 0 is the set of leading coefficients of polynomials in A of degree less than or equal to 0. Degree 0 means what?
Constants.
They're constants. So what constants are in this?
Negative 1.
No.
0.
Zero, I mean, this ideal, remember, consists of multiples of this.
Right.
It consists of this. It consists of x times this. The point is, you're not going to get any constants in this ideal.
Right.
Except 0. 0. Okay, so this is just the ideal consisting of 0. Okay. What is A1? A1 is the set of all the leading coefficients of terms in here that are of degree 1 or less. Are there any?
It's 0, yeah.
You can't have any, there's no polynomial in here of degree 1 or less. This consists of multiples of a cubic. You're not going to get anything less than a cubic in degree. So this is 0 again. A2, 0 again. How about A3?
There we go.
Okay, A3, well, you have certainly, you have a leading coefficient right with this generator in A3. What else are you going to get? Of course, now, yeah, I mean...
You just keep multiplying it by, you know, the real, real number, right? And so you get any leading coefficient.
Let me change this to
Z. Yeah. Okay. So it's then 3, 6, and R.
Z, yes. Okay. It would be R. You're right. Make this Z now, the integers. Much more interesting. So now what am I going to get? 3, 6, 9. I'm going to get multiples of 3, right? Okay, and so on. This is of degree 3 or less. Okay, and then I have to do degree 4 or less.
But the leading coefficient would be the same then for all of them after that, right? After A3?
Yeah, it looks that way, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, but keep in mind that this is a simple case of a principal ideal generated by one element. Mm-hmm. This is, as we saw, not a principal ideal domain. That's that example I had, the ideal generated by X and 2. And you can get examples here. So the point is that we can get more complicated things as we increase the generators. Okay? It gets more complicated if I put a X to the fifth minus X plus 1 here. It gets more complicated what you can get. So, I mean, it's not... I'm kind of here, but it's Okay, it is what it is. The nice thing about it, we don't have to understand it too much beyond this. Okay, everyone see, we're getting a little better feel now what these leading coefficients are. Okay, so there's two claims here. An is an ideal of R. Okay, well that's easy to see, right? Because an ideal has to be closed under subtraction and multiplication by anything. Okay, so if you have two elements in An, that means each one is a leading coefficient. Their difference would be the leading coefficient of what polynomial? The okay?
Difference.
Someone said it. Who said it?
Well, I just repeated the word difference.
Oh, yeah, that's right. No, I heard it. Supreme knowledge. Okay. No, that's exactly right. The difference of the two polynomials, right? To show that this is an ideal, you have to show it's closed under subtraction and multiplication by anything in the ring. If you have two leading coefficients, one of this polynomial, one of that polynomial, the difference of those two leading coefficients is the leading coefficient of the difference of the two polynomials. Right? The leading coefficient... Okay, so... Okay, so the same thing, if you you want to show it's that if you multiply something in An by anything in the ring, well, okay, so how do you modify a polynomial with a given leading coefficient to get a polynomial whose leading coefficient is little r times the one you have? You multiply the polynomial by little r, which is a constant polynomial. It sounds perfectly well. Okay, so this, okay? Can I put the clear here? Is that all right? Okay. The other thing, okay, everybody sort of see...
is almost alive.
Everybody sort of see that? Okay? You know, it just goes along with the... Okay, and now the other condition here is that An is contained in An plus 1. Okay? Why is this? Suppose I have a number in the ring, R, that's a leading coefficient. How do I know it's a leading coefficient of a polynomial of 1 degree higher? What do I do to the polynomial of which it's a leading coefficient? Multiply by X, which of course is still in the ideal because the ideal is closed under multiplication by anything. Okay, so that's the... Okay? So, those are two basic things there. Okay, now, we need one lemma and then we can go right into the other basic thing. Okay, let A and B... Let A and B be ideals of R bracket S. If A is contained in B, then An is contained in Bn for all M. Ideal contained in a bigger ideal, the leading coefficients of the polynomials in A are certainly contained in the leading coefficients of something that contains A. Okay, so that An is contained in Bn is clear. Okay, so now I just have to show the last claim that. Okay, so now look and see what this is saying. This is saying that if you don't if you have a bigger ideal, if B is if B contains A, so it's either the same or bigger, if B contains A, and yet you don't pick up any new leading coefficients, then B must be A. That if you make B, if it's really a bigger ideal, you have to pick up some new leading coefficients. If this is true for all n. Okay. Okay, so now, okay, we will use induction for the second one. Namely, we will use induction for the second claim. Namely, we will show that the induction claim will be that polynomials of degree k let's let f of x equal a b0 plus b1x plus bnxn be an element of b. Okay? You know, so I'm going to, let's assume that an equals bn for all n. Okay, that's the hypothesis of the second claim. Now I'm going to show that a equals b. Okay? I'm going to do that by showing that, I mean, clearly, A is contained in B, that's given. So I have to show B is contained in A. So my task is to show that this polynomial that's in B is also in A. Then B will be contained in A, and I'll have A equals B. So I'm going to do so by one degree at a time, sort of, but by induction. I want to show that that polynomials, first I'll show that any polynomial of degree zero that's in B is in A. Then I'll make an inductive hypothesis saying that assume that any polynomial of degree n minus 1 or less that's in B is in A, and then show that it's true for n. Standard induction proof. Okay, now, so let's do the case if n equals 0, then what happens here? Then f of x is just what? F of x is just b0, right? Okay, f of x is b0, which is f of x is equal to b0, which of course is in b0, right? Because it's a constant, it's its own leading coefficient. Which is equal to a0 which is contained in A. Why is that? These are just constants, right? So what do we have? Yeah, we have a0 equals, I mean, assuming a n is a b n for all n, so a0 equals b0. Okay, so the trivial case, or the starting case, when n is 0, this polynomial in B just reduces to the constant b0, okay, which is its own the leading coefficient of itself, so it's certainly in b0, having degree 0. B0 is equal to a0, okay?
Because when you say a n equals b n, that means they're indexed in the same way. So that there's a one-to-one mapping. You can say a zero equals b zero, yes, a one equals b
one. A n equals b n for all n. That's for all n.
Oh, for all n. Right. Okay.
Okay. Okay. So then, so f of x is just b zero. If n is zero, there's no x's. And then B0, of course, is the leading term, so it is in B0, which is equal to A0. And why is A0 contained in A? Because A0 is because it's polynomials of degree 0, right? Why is A0 in A? Because A is an ideal. A is an ideal. Oh yeah, because A0 is in the ring, right? I mean, all of these A and B are in the ring, but because I'm looking at constant polynomials, okay, A0. Everything that's in A0, these are all the terms that are in A. Yeah, I mean, A0 consists of the leading coefficients of constants in A. So of a constant polynomial, the leading coefficient is the polynomial. So A0 is just in A.
Because it's already clear that An is an ideal.
Yeah, I mean, these are all ideals we've seen. Yeah. Right, exactly. Okay. It's because I'm working with zero here, right? What is A0 equal? A0 consists of the leading coefficients of the constant polynomials in A. But constant polynomials are their own, it is the leading coefficient, it's itself. So the leading coefficients of all constant polynomials is just all constant polynomials. So they're certainly in A. This is just saying that the constant polynomials in A are in A. Okay? Okay, so everyone with me on that. So this is a starting case. It's true for zero. So what this says then is if A0 equals B0, then f of x is in A. Okay, remember, I'm given A is contained in B. I want to show B is contained in A. I've just done that for zero degree polynomials. I've taken one right here, and I've shown that it's in. Okay. Now, the inductive hypothesis. Now, assume that. Now, assume that degree n minus one polynomials in B are in A. And now look at f of x of degree n in B. Like we started with there, okay? So I prove it for zero. I'm going to assume it's true for n minus one. Okay, so as f of x is in B, we know that little b sub n is in b sub n, right? Because here it is. Here's little f of x. B sub n is its leading coefficient, which is equal to a sub n by hypothesis, right? Agree? So, what does this mean? Look at this. If b sub n is in a sub n, so there exists a polynomial g of x, now let's write this out, in A, with g of x equals a0 plus a1x plus bn x to the n. Right? I assume this inductive result for n minus 1. Now look at f of x, a polynomial of degree n, in capital B. I want to show it's in capital A. B sub n is the leading coefficient of f of x, as you can see. So by definition, it's in capital B sub n, which by hypothesis is A sub n. So B sub n, that ring element, is in A sub n, which means, by definition of A sub n, that it must be a leading coefficient of a polynomial of degree n. So there must be a polynomial g of x in A, with g of x is equal to this.
Oh, so that is a bn.
That's a bn at the end, yeah, because that has to be the leading coefficient. But as A is contained in B, this says, of course, that g of x is in B. Right? Because we assume all along that A is in B. Okay? So, we now look at f of x minus g of x. So f of x minus g of x is in B, because both f of x and g of x are in B, and B is an ideal. And the degree of f of x minus g of x is less than or equal to n minus 1. Here, in fact, why don't we just put a less than or equal to. Okay, this we use the second form of induction that we assume is true up to n minus 1, just in case there's some zero coefficient. Okay? Okay, so now what do we have here? Okay, everybody see here? I mean, it's less complicated than it looks. Here's a polynomial f of x in B of degree n. Okay? Its leading coefficient is in capital B sub n, which we're assuming is equal to capital A sub n. Okay? So therefore, if it's in capital A sub n, it must be the leading coefficient of something in A. So here's that something. Okay? But g of x is in A, which is contained in B, so g of x is in B. Take the difference of these two polynomials in B. Since they have the same xn coefficient, the nth power term drops out, and we have a polynomial of degree less than or equal to n minus 1. By induction, by the induction hypothesis, f of x minus g of x is in A. Okay, that's the induction hypothesis. Okay, but now we're done. Because where is g of x in A? If g of x is in A, and A is an ideal, f of x has to be in A. Because you take this in A, add to it g of x, which is in A, ideal, close under addition. Okay, g of x is in A, we deduce f of x is in A, as desired. Okay? So that's that. All right, so I mean, this is not a surprising result. It basically just says that if your set of leading coefficients don't get higher, I mean, you know, if an equals bn for all n, then if you really have a bigger ideal in your polynomial ring, you have to have bigger somewhere. You got to have one of these leading coefficient ideals be bigger than its mate. That's all. Okay? That sort of makes sense? All right, so that's just a little lemma. So now we're in great position to prove Hilbert's famous basis theorem. And this is a really slick proof. Hilbert's basis theorem. If R is an Noetherian ring, or if R is an Noetherian, if R is a Noetherian ring, so is R bracket X, the ring of polynomials. Okay, so this couldn't be more elegant. Okay, so let's A A1 contained in A2, contained in A3, contained in dot, 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 be an ascending chain of ideals in R bracket X. Okay, so we just have an ascending chain. Okay, now remember, whenever, as we just did, whenever we have an ideal in a polynomial ring, we can form these AN. Oh, by the way, this thing is here, just this, no, we call AN the nth associated ideal of A. So we want to prove that this polynomial ring satisfies the ascending chain condition. So let this be an ascending chain. I want to prove that it eventually becomes constant, right? You can't keep on getting bigger and bigger. Okay, now let A sub I j. Okay, so here I have a chain, right? Each one of these ideals has associated ideals, right? We took an ideal A and we formed this the A sub N. So because I have infinitely many ideals, I double index Aij be the J associated ideal of A sub I. Okay, everybody see what I mean here? So A sub I is just one of these, and then it has its leading coefficients of polynomials of degree less than or equal to J, for each J.
So the A1, 2, 3 are not associated ideals. The singly indexed.
No, these are not associated ideals. Yeah, these are the
notationally, it looks like what we just did.
Oh,
not at all the same.
Right. Should I use different letters? Or?
I'm just checking.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
So it's okay. I just wanted to.
It's okay, yeah. You're exactly right, Craig. Yeah, no, that's a bad choice of letters, perhaps. Call it anything you want. But I mean, there's dummy letters here. But I mean, these are ideals in the polynomial ring. Yeah, so we should call them. You want to make them P's? It's okay. 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 Okay, now, so here. We have the following. Now, here, this is. Now here's what we have here. We have, and this, you know, watch what I write here so we have room here. A, let me do a little more. A10 is contained in A20, is contained in A30, is contained in. I'm going up, dot, dot, dot. Dot, 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 okay? Okay, now let's think for a second. What I've written here, A1 what is A10? See, here I have the second index is 0, right? So this is the 0 associated ideal of A1, A2, A3. We agreed earlier that if A is contained in B, then AN is contained in BN. If the ideal gets bigger, then so do its leading coefficients, clearly. So these are the 0. These are the constant terms, basically, of A1, A2, A3, which, because they're nested getting bigger, the constant terms have to get bigger. This is contained in this leading upwards, right? But, on the other hand, we also know that this one, AN, is contained in AN plus 1. So I also have this, contained in A11, contained in A12, contained in dot, dot, dot. And then this is contained in A21, contained in A22, contained in dot, dot, dot. And then here, this is contained in A31, and this is contained in A32, contained in dot, dot, dot. And this is contained in here. Everybody see? I have this double grid here.
of containments. One containment is because I'm including the leading coefficients of polynomials of degree up through 7 as a subset of those of up through 8. Because this degree, remember the original thing is less than or equal to degree less than or equal. So that gives me the containment this way. The containment the other way is because the rings themselves, the ideals themselves are getting bigger. And whatever index I'm looking at, degree 7, if I have a bigger ideal, of which A2 is over A1, I'm going to have a bigger... Okay, so we have the double containment. Now...
So going up is the coefficient containment, and then going across is the...
Going up follows from this containment.
Okay.
Going across follows from the...
From the
degree.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Now, going up here, okay, look at the second column here. This is 1, 1, 2, 1, 3, 1. So these are polynomials of degree 1 or less. But here's degree 1 or less in the smallest one, which is smaller than the degree 1 or less in this next one, which is small. So that's going up. Going across is degrees here. I mean, that we're looking at degree 1 polynomial, but we're looking at, or I forget which way I was going here. Yeah, I mean, one is going across this way, one is going by degrees. Okay? Because of the less than or equal to. So I created an obvious containment situation by looking at less, I mean, everything less than or equal to degree 5 is certainly contained in everything less than or equal to degree 6. And so on. Okay, now, here's the thing. Look at the diagonal here. This is incredibly important. Look at the diagonal. Okay? A10, A21, A32. Now, first of all, look at A10. It's contained in this, right? Which is contained in this. So, of course, this is contained in this. And this is contained in this, which is contained in this, so this is contained in this. So look at diagonal. We see that A10 is contained in A21, is contained in A32, is contained and so on. Right? Now these double index A's are ideals in R. They're constants in the ring R. R is presumed to be Noetherian. Therefore, any ascending chain of ideals must eventually become constant. Okay, as R is Noetherian, this chain must eventually become constant. Agreed? Okay, now, here's the great thing. So, at some point, this diagonal chain becomes constant. Let's just, for the sake of picturing what's going on, let's just say that it becomes constant right here at the second step. So this is strictly bigger than this, but let's say these two are the same, and then it becomes the same from then on. Now, if this is the same as this on the diagonal, then this, being trapped between two equal things, has to be the same also. And likewise, this, being trapped between two equal things, has to be the same. And likewise, everything... So if this is the point at which these, you know, this become constant, then there's a whole upper infinite rectangle here that is all constant. Mm-hmm. Right? So I'll write this in a second. Okay? Everybody see that? Mm-hmm. Just take this simple example to illustrate. We're looking at this diagonal here. So here, diagonal, diagonal, diagonal. That's an ascending chain of ideals, so at some point it becomes constant because R is in theory. Let's say it becomes constant, just for example, right here. So this is equal to this, is equal to this. But because of these containments, everything inside this little dotted rectangle are equal. Okay? Now, let me talk through this, and I'll draw another little picture to help. So so we have an upper right-hand rectangle here that's constant. They're all the same ideal. Now, look at the columns to the left. I mean, even though I've drawn it in the second position, imagine it occurs, you know, 50 units out. Look at the columns that are to the left of this infinite rectangle. They are ascending ideals, so they too must become constant. Right? So what that says, and how many columns are there to the left of this? Finite. I mean, this occurs in some place, maybe 50 units out, maybe 5 billion, but there are only a finite number of columns to the left of the border of this rectangle. These ascending columns themselves, being chains of ideals, have to become constant. There's a finite number of things, each of which becomes constant. So what that tells me is that there's some level, maybe above this level, but there's some level at which everything above that is constant. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's just say, for simplicity, that the level at which everything becomes constant, and here, back to a simple example, there's only one column. Let's just say that it becomes constant right here, that these two are equal, okay? Okay, but now, what that means is that these are all constant above that. Let me write this out here. Okay, let's draw a picture. Okay. So the diagram looks like the following. We have this here. This is sort of, we have this upper right rectangle here, and we have some level here, L, and we have these columns, finite number, sense what I'm doing here? Okay, so the diagram looks like this. As there are only finitely many, we're basically done, as there are only finitely many columns to left of shaded zone, there is some level L. Because the columns, everything in this shaded zone is all the same. They're all exactly the same ideal. So the columns here are certainly constant. And there's only a finite number of columns to the left of this shaded zone. And each of these is working up an ascending chain, which by Noetherian has to become constant. So each of these becomes constant at different heights. Maybe there's five columns, like here, to the left of this zone, and they all constant out after different heights. But there's only finitely many of them, so there's some height L past which every column is constant. Right? So now, what does that say? We're in great shape now by this lemma, okay? But what this lemma says is that if In other words, look at. Let's just say the level here is right here, okay? Right here, as I've drawn this little line here. This is the L, okay? Let's say everything, every column above this line is constant. Okay, so what does this say? What this says is what? That A 30 is equal to everything above it. A 30 is equal to A 40. A 31 is equal to A 41. A 32 is equal to A 42. Well, that just means that A 3 and A 4 have the same associated ideals for all indexes. So A 3 must be equal to A 4 by this lemma. And likewise, past it, it's all constant. Okay? Okay, so, past which all vertical chains become constant. This by the lemma, this says that AL equals AL plus 1 equals AL plus 2 equals dot dot dot. And there's your. So indeed, R bracket X is Noetherian, as it satisfies ACC, the Abelian chain condition. Okay, make sense? It's a very slick proof, really, and there's not much going on once we have that lemma. Does everybody get the idea, I hope? You just create this double grid of containments horizontally and vertically, and every column has to eventually become constant, as does every row for that matter. But the point is, look at the diagonals. Those have to become constant, because that's an accident of the chain of ideals. And if the diagonals become constant, then by these containments, everything inside this shaded zone is the same. So in particular, the columns of lying below the shaded zone all become equal entities once you get into the shaded zone, and there's only a finite number of columns to the left, which also are subject to the Noetherian assumption on R, so they have to level out. So everything above this level L, every column is constant. Right? So what that means is that there's some level, A sub L, so that A sub, as you see here, you know, A sub 30 equals A sub 40, and A sub 31 equals A sub 41, and A sub 32 equals A sub 42, so A sub 3K equals A sub 4K, so A sub 3 equals A sub 4, and then all above that. Okay? Alright, so that's the critical Hilbert basis theorem. So now, a corollary to this, of course, is that if R is Noetherian, so is R bracket X1, X2, Xn for any n greater than or equal to 1. So we proved it for n equals 1, right? But what's the proof of this? We just use the fact that R X1, X2, Xn. And I mean, and this will come up over and over. Imagine a polynomial in n variables. It can be thought of as polynomial in X sub n with coefficients chosen from the polynomials in n minus 1.
right? In other words, a polynomial in x and y, x cubed y squared minus x squared y to the fifth plus y squared plus y to the tenth can be thought of as a polynomial in the variable y with coefficients in the ring R of x. So it's y to the tenth minus x squared y to the fifth plus x cubed y squared. It's a polynomial in y with coefficients in x, or more generally, a polynomial in xn with coefficients here. So now a simple induction, right? So this is, takes you from 1 to 2, 2 to 3, and so on. So in other words, R of x1, x2, or R of, let's say, R of xy is R bracket x of y. Right? I mean, that's just the way it is. Every polynomial in x and y is a polynomial in y with coefficients in x. So if R is Noetherian, R of x is Noetherian by Hilbert basis theorem. And if R of x is Noetherian, then you have a polynomial ring in it. It's Noetherian, but same thing, so that's Noetherian. Okay. Questions? Making some sense, I hope? Yeah, okay. So this is a very important result, and then the reason is because it says that every ideal is finitely generated in a Noetherian ring. So that, again, will allow us. So we're in great position. I was hoping to at least get through all of this. So next week we will plunge in immediately with affine or algebraic varieties, as they're called, which are subsets of affine space, which is basically sort of Euclidean space without distance or anything being a concern. Affine variety will be a set of points in, for the moment, Euclidean space, let's call it, that is the solution set to a set of polynomials. We'll establish immediately, as we've really already walked through, that a set of polynomials can be replaced by the ideal they generate. And by the Hilbert basis theorem, that ideal has a finite number of generators, so we can always define an affine variety to be the set of points that are the solution set to a finite list of polynomials. So you can think of either as a finite list of polynomials, or if you like, as an ideal generated by those or whatever other generators that you may choose. Okay, questions on that? And of course, you know, keep in mind here that of interest to us is the situation when the ring is a field, like the complexes or the reals. And a field is automatically Noetherian because, you know, we've got a couple of minutes left. What are the ideals in a field?
Zero in the field. Itself.
Yeah, in a field, the only ideals are the zero, consisting of zero and the whole thing. Because in a field, if K is a field and J is an ideal in K, and if A is if zero, is a non-zero element in J, and J is an ideal, the element A inverse is in the field, right? Because it's a field. Every element non-zero has a multiplicative inverse. So since it's an ideal, it has to be closed under multiplication by anything. So take A, multiply it by A inverse, you get 1. So 1 has to be in J. And if an ideal contains 1, then it contains any element in the ring by just multiplying that element 1 in the ideal by the element in the field. You get the element in the field being in the ideal, so the ideal is a whole ring. If 1 is in J, which implies that J is K. So a field only has two ideals, the ideal consisting only of zero and the ideal consisting of the whole field. So a field is automatically Noetherian. I mean, there's no infinite chain, there's only two ideals. So what that says is that if R is a field, then this ring, polynomial ring, is Noetherian. It falls into the category we've been talking about. Okay, any questions? All right, so again, next week we'll talk about variety. We'll introduce these two functions, V and I, going the two different directions, from geometric set to ideal, from ideal to geometric set. There's some interesting properties, and then we lead up to this Hilbert-Gluck-Stellensatz, which is the huge theorem, which says that it tells you under what conditions you can start with an ideal, find the points that are satisfied by every polynomial in the ideal, find the polynomials that fill out those points and be back where you started, rather than something bigger. So, okay, now, homework. We need to see most of what's on the homework here. We're dealing with stuff we haven't got to yet. In fact, all of it is.
Go home and read it and do it.
Read it, yeah. Read ahead. Oh, yeah. So, yeah. So I'll hang on to the homework. Yeah. I mean, it's all dealing. I mean, this is really sort of review stuff in a way, or background stuff. Yeah. I mean, you can feel. I mean, the book is not bad, but you can read that first section when he talks about geometry. That's sort of a nice introduction to the type of things we'll be looking at. But then he talks about the Gluck-Stellensatz and the Zariski topology. So we'll be talking about algebraic set is what we talk about next, or varieties, as they're also called. Okay, we're off and going.